All right, Alexander, let's get to the questions that we had from our live that we did with Andre Martianov and Gonzalo Lira. Let's just jump right into it and get to these questions from Odyssey, Rumble, YouTube, and of course, our great locals community. And let's start with this question from Commander Crossfire. Russia is more than the Federation. It is a people, a history, a symbol. Both pariah and messiah of Europe. I like that. Both pariah and messiah. Very nice. Tim Gibson, thank you for that super sticker. Patrick Wan says, your program is the one that I most look forward to every day. Thank you so much. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Respiger, for that super sticker. Raphael says, on the 9th, Russia will have a parade. Every Russian knows that for the next one, all 153 million may not be there. But for us in the West, this is a joke, and this will be our demise. Quit the war.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think for Russians, it is an existential issue. I think we heard what Andrei Martianov had to say about this. I don't think his opinions are any different from those of the vast majority of Russians. Obviously, you will find a small number of westernized people, you know, what some people in Russia call the fifth column, who will always support the West against their own country. But politically, they're not significant. And that's the fundamental difference. For Russians, this is an existential war now, one that they are convinced that the West is out to, you know, defeat them, destroy them, break up their country. They will fight, we won't. And at the same time, we haven't assessed properly what the consequences of failure for us in Ukraine will be. Because, frankly, they will be immense. I'm not going to try and guess fully what they are, but it will be a geopolitical earthquake that will make Vietnam, Afghanistan, all of the others minor by comparison.
All right. Glacier says, talk about the OSCE giving intel to the Ukrainians to adjust targets in Donbass. The offices in Mariupol was a depot for Italian mines and was full of reports on paper about crimes of the AFU.
I think it is profoundly shocking. I mean, obviously, this hasn't been independently corroborated, but I frankly believe it is true. The reason I believe it is true is because there's been long history, I'm sorry to say this, of inspection teams and other teams going to countries like, you know, Iraq, and providing, as we found out later, intelligence to the US government and to its proxies. And it looks as if, it does seem to me very much as if the OSCE has done the same thing. And I'm completely unsurprised. It is again an example of the extent to which the Western powers have taken control of all international organizations. But of course, what it means is it's another step in the destruction of the international reputation of those organizations. And it means that we're going to revert before very long to the world of the 1950s, in which there were two power blocks. They had very little contacts at all with each other, and nothing that existed in between was trusted.
All right. Bauke says, question for Mr. Martianov, whom I highly regard. It's a serious question. Isn't the West entitled to win this war?
Well, why is it?
That's a good question.
Well, isn't. Why? I mean, the word I dislike here is entitled. Why is the West entitled to win this war? What gives?
That's the question.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the question. I mean, but anyway, I mean, I don't think it is entitled to win a war. I think that the West is playing out a proxy war, everybody now admits it, against Russia and Ukraine. It is Ukraine's people who are suffering. What gives the right to the West, what gives the West the entitlement to wage proxy wars on the territories of other countries with other peoples at their expense? I think this is a disastrous war. I think it's an immoral project. I'm sure Martiana, if he was here, would say the same.
David S., thank you for that super sticker. Jay Galt said, why did Lavrov choose this moment to comment on the ethnicity of the famous Austrian? No way he didn't plan this out. We actually
did that. But I'm going to add my own two pennies worth, which is I think he made a serious mistake. I think he should have steered very well clear of that particular topic. As it happens, I believe he's wrong. And I think that Lavrov, for once, blundered, and blundered badly. I think he could have very simply said, look, if you want to discuss how a Jewish president accepts the fact that he's got these people with these militant beliefs in his army, well, then you must address the question to him, because it's obviously wrong. It's deeply cynical on his part. It's a question of who is using whom. But the fact is that that's what the situation is. And it's been massively and fully documented, including by international organizations like Amnesty and Human Rights Watch and whatever. For Lavrov to start getting into controversial genealogies like that, I think was a mistake. And it's caused offense in Israel, as it was inevitably going to do.
I'll give my two cents on this too, because I have a very similar take on this. I agree with you. I think it was a mistake and a blunder. I don't know if it was a blunder. I think he may have done it intentionally, because they're probably getting frustrated with the with this. Well, how can there be Azov? NAZIs if the president is Jewish? I would have said exactly what you said. I would have said this is documented before Zelensky, and I would have said the Azov guys actually were forming under Poroshenko and under Yatsenyuk and under the coup. Yeah. So this is before, you know, Azov was being built before Zelensky was even in the picture.
Yes.
So I think that would have been a perfectly suitable answer. And the other thing I will add real quick, and we'll get back to the questions, is why do the Russian officials, why does the Kremlin do these Western mainstream media interviews anymore? That's a serious question. Why do them? You gain nothing out of them.
Exactly.
Nothing.
I'm entirely in agreement with that.
Peskov, Lavrov, why do them?
I mean, Lavrov, I would have thought it better of him than to waste his time with an Italian media agency.
Here's my question to you. Does he gain anything out of it?
No, it gains nothing. All he's achieved.
India's fine.
Yeah. India's fine. Latin America is fine.
China, India,
wherever.
Brazil,
wherever. But as I said, with these Western agencies, all you get is a dialogue of the deaf, all these incredibly crude and provocative statements. They gain absolutely nothing at all. I wouldn't bother. I think that they're completely wrong to do it. I think there's a complete waste of time. And as I said, in this particular instance, I'm entirely in agreement with you on this. All that it's done is created an embarrassing incident with Israel, which Russia really doesn't need at this time.
Yeah, why do these interviews anyway?
No.
All right. let's see. Raphael says, the reason the U.S., EU, NATO are talking so much from a former U.S. Marines, they are scared. Russia can feel it. 2,000 seconds to reach Paris has meaning.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to this. I think that they are, to some extent, scared. But I think they're also drunk, intoxicated with the period of the moment. I think what has happened, and this really needs to be explained, I think that things are not turning out at all as predicted on the economic front. I think they were all expecting back in February that, you know, the Russian economy would collapse, the banking system would collapse, there'd be a massive uprising against Putin in Russia. That hasn't happened. And I think they find themselves in an economic war of attrition. And I think they're also finding themselves in a war of military attrition in Ukraine, neither of which they had expected. But as we've discussed so many times, these people have no reverse gear. What they do is they double down. And, you know, you get any number, $3 billion, then that becomes $30 billion. And soon it will become, you know, even more than this. And because that's the only thing these people know how to do. And yes, there's fear. But where there's fear, there's always anger. And anger is a very bad counselor.
Joe Lucas says, can you explain what is going on in Armenia? Another regime change by the CIA.
I haven't followed it. Lots going on in Armenia. But I mean, I would say it would be surprising if there was a big change of position in Armenia. Because, of course, Pashinyan, who is now the prime minister of Armenia, when he came to power, he too was seen as, you know, America's friend. And, you know, that didn't turn out. And I'm pretty sure if there is another regime change in Armenia, more protests and all of that. And I'm not following this. I've studied this story in great detail. I think that you will find that whichever new Armenian government appears, it will essentially follow the same policy as the previous one, just as Pashinyan was able to do. I'm going to also, by the way, briefly take this opportunity to disagree on one topic with Andrei. I don't think Kazakhstan is going to break its links with Russia. I think that, yes, there are still people in Kazakhstan who are part of, you know, the more Western system. But I think Chinese and Russian influence is complementary in that part of the world. And I expect before long they'll be winkled out.
All right. From Jean-Luc Ismay, may you ask Andrei, what is your opinion because of the RF general staff continues to let Lviv be the meeting and training point of mercenaries? At the beginning of the war, there was still a hypersonic visit. Now it seems a center for conviviality and nothing happens, just as the railways continue to work normally. Why?
Well, the railways are not working normally, and there's a fuel crisis across Ukraine. So, you know, let's not say that things are happening as always, because they're not. There are always pressures on the Russians to intensify attacks on Lviv and those sort of places. And I'm going to say, I think that we are going to see a steady escalation in Russian attacks on places like Lviv and even on Kiev too. And the reason there's going to be Russian escalation is because it's going to counter Western escalation. Now, that's a subject which we're going to discuss in another program, but I'm pretty sure that that's coming.
From AZ Mary, MSM always says if Russia uses one nuclear missile in 7 minutes, the whole Russian territory will be destroyed. The end. Is it that simple?
No, it's not that simple. And anybody who knows anything about nuclear war knows that it isn't that simple at all. And in fact, anybody who talks about nuclear wars or nuclear attack on Russia is, in my opinion, borderline insane and perhaps even insane. I've done a program for locals in which I said that it is absolutely outrageous how this talk about nuclear war has been circulating in the West, and how Russian comments about this have been completely distorted and made to appear like the Russians are talking about using nuclear weapons and are threatening to use nuclear weapons when they've done no such thing. Lavrov, by the way, in that long interview with the Italian media, went one part of it, which he did well, was when he actually said that, you know, it's absolutely terrible that Russian comments on nuclear war have been distorted and misrepresented in the way that they have done to reverse their meaning and to make it appear as if the Russians are threatening to do something, when in fact, on the contrary, they're clearly saying they won't do it and are warning others against doing it too.
All right, Scott says, can you recommend independent French language news channels? France 24 might as well be CNN. Also, do you think the May 9 celebrations in Russia will be covered by Western media or ignored? Thanks.
I don't know about the second. I think that they will try perhaps to spin these celebrations to fit whatever narrative at that time they have about Ukraine. But I'm not going to speculate further about the May 9th celebrations. But on French media, I'm afraid I can't help you. I do believe that there is a considerable amount of independent media in France, but I don't pretend to be up to date with it. And I agree with your assessment about mainstream media in France. It's absolutely terrible. Le Monde, which used to be a great newspaper, is just, you know, the French equivalent of the New York Times and The Guardian. Le Monde Diplomatique, which is a completely separate news magazine, used to be fairly interesting. I haven't read it for a very, very long time. I doubt that it's much better than Le Monde itself anymore.
All right, Legal Hawk says, what are the parameters of the war for Odessa? Is it significant that the Odessa authorities have ordered a May 1 to May 3 curfew for the city?
I'm not surprised that it is, because I gather the situation in Odessa is becoming increasingly difficult, and in Nikolaev too. I don't know, and I'm not going to try and speculate, and I think if Andrei was with us, he wouldn't either. I would guess, my own guess, is that the Russians will focus on sorting out Donbass first. Andrei said that the most powerful concentration of Ukrainian troops is now in the Odessa region, which I think is probably true. And I don't think the Russians will want to take it on until they've sorted out the Donbass.
All right. Tim, thank you for that super sticker. Bella, thank you for that super sticker. Trevelyn, thank you for that super sticker. VB says, I was wondering why Finland wants to join NATO. Are they actually scared of a Russian invasion, or are they being coerced or bought by the West?
Well, it's the second. I mean, and not just the second. I mean, you know, this is a very young Finnish government. You can see the kind of people we're talking about. They're the usual, the Annalena Baerbock of Finland. They're very much part of the Western club, and they want to be full members of it. Not, I think, most of the Finnish people who are not being consulted about this. It's this small leadership group, this usual elite of people who want to be part of the European, the Euro-Atlantic system. And that's what they're going to do. I think it's a terrible mistake for Finland. I think neutrality worked very well for Finland. It prospered. It's not prospering anything like as much anymore. But I think it's a dumb thing.
Yeah. Sidebook VR says, what are the birth rates like in Russia and Ukraine? In South Korea, we had to reduce the army by more than 10%, as it is 0.7 birth female. Think the Amish will outlive us.
I'm afraid that what I've heard about the birth rate in Ukraine is that it is terrible. I mean, they haven't done a census in Ukraine for years. And nobody knows exactly what the population of Ukraine actually is anymore. But I've heard that it is terrible and that the population is contracting, partly because the birth rate is so low and also because there's so much emigration from the country. In Russia, it goes up and down. They had a period earlier, a couple of years ago, where the birth rate was rising. Then it began to fall again. Because of the so-called bad demographic echo. This is because of the losses in the Second World War and during the 1990s, losses of men and losses of male children. But actually, the last few indicators suggested that there's been a small uptick, and perhaps that will continue.
All right. From, let's see... Daniela, thank you for that super sticker. Maria, thank you for that super sticker. Sanjeva says, what do you think about Kazakhstan? I heard that the pro-Western elements have again come to places of power. Will it abandon Russia? We answered that. Yeah. You answered that. Actually, Andre answered that, and you answered that again. Jam says, why is the Ukraine war not viewed as a civil war?
That's an excellent question, because it is. I mean, it's both a war between... It's many things. It's a war between Russia and Ukraine. But don't forget, Russia and Ukraine were formally... part of one country, and I don't just mean the Soviet Union, but also the Russian Empire. I mean, for most of its history, people just didn't think of Ukraine as anything else other than a part of Russia. So, you know, there is that element of civil war there too, but there is the internal conflict between the people in Donbass and the government of Ukraine, the rest of Ukraine. So that's a civil war. And of course, it's also a proxy war now, increasingly, between the United States and Russia. And I'm going to make a prediction, by the way. The fact that it is now so visibly a proxy war is over time going to become the single point about this war that more and more people will start to understand. And that will, in time, change perspectives of it, both in Russia, it's already changing perspectives of the war very quickly, but eventually in the West as well, especially as economic hardships grow.
Yeah. Raphael says, I am so against this stupid war. Why are we so few?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Raphael, I remember, we always start as few. Yep. If you go back in time, you know, I remember when the West intervened in Afghanistan in 2001. I was opposed to it. I thought it was an extraordinary mistake. I remember thinking that it would all end badly. I was absolutely alone amongst my friends in thinking that at the time. Nobody paid any attention. I remember thinking the same over Libya. Sooner or later, well, today on Afghanistan, everybody agrees with my original position, though most of them would never agree would never admit that they were wrong and I was right. And I'm pretty sure that we're going to find that in time, people in the West, more and more people in the West, will come round to our point of view about the war as well. And by the way, I hate it just as much as you do.
Yoav, thank you for that super chat. Raphael says, Russians like to hear your voice so that they can locate you and come get you. We are doing them a big favor by talking so much we won't hear them. Thank you, Raphael, for that. Joshua says, thank you all so much. This is a big topic, but I would love to hear some analysis on the roots and causes of why there is so much hatred of Russia in the West. The amount of bigotry is intolerable.
Well, I have to say, I sometimes ask myself that question. I mean, you know, you can come up with all sorts of explanations, that Russia is so huge, and some people find that intimidating, that very few people speak Russian, and the language seems impenetrable, that there's a religious difference, they're Orthodox, and most people in the West are either Catholic and Protestant Christians, or increasingly not Christians at all, and very antagonistic to Christians. I don't think any of these explanations in and of themselves are anywhere close to being sufficient. I mean, I have to say that. I mean, I simply, you know, I am trying to work my way towards an answer to that question too, because I don't think any of these explanations one hears come anywhere close to explaining it fully. Obviously, in Eastern Europe, the communist period has had an effect, and there you can understand it. But why British people, why Germans, why French people are so hostile to Russia, Swedes, I mean, it's difficult to some extent to understand. But, you know, in a sense, we have to just accept that that is the reality. And so do the Russians. And we have to find a way around. And maybe in time, when historians do, you know, the work and look into all of this, we will find some deeper explanations for these strange pathologies. One thing I would say, I think one reason why there's so much anger and hate of Russia and of Russians is because at several levels, many Europeans know something, which is that the West has never treated Russia properly or respectfully. And Dostoevsky once said that people always hate those they've wronged. And I think there is a strong element of that in this.
A troubled mind says, how would Andre compare today's Russian military command versus Soviet era from a leadership and confidence standpoint? It appears at least from afar that political and military leadership are on the same page.
I think that is a very good question, and maybe that's one we should address to Andre. I'm not going to try and answer that. I don't know. Andre is perhaps the person to answer it. I will forward that question. I would be interested to know his views. Maybe he can discuss that in one of his own videos.
Okay. From Optims Princeps says, hello, just found you guys about a month ago. You guys are amazing. What do you think is going to happen to Nord Stream 2 and in the aftermath of the war?
I think it's going to remain under the Baltic Sea and rust. I don't see any chance of it being revived, even if the Germans were to do a complete U-turn on it, which I don't see for the moment. I mean, the idea that Habeck and Baerbock and Scholz would revive Nord Stream 2 seems to me inconceivable. But anyway, even if the Germans were to have a complete change of heart about Nord Stream 2, I don't think the Russians would be interested in reviving it. From the Russian point of view, it's quite clear now that the place where they intend to sell their gas and their oil is Asia.
From Morden, best podcast ever. Thank you, Morden, for that. Tony says, serious question for you all, since I like you all both. Why is Peter listed as a director of the Duran when I looked it up online? Bit of a conflict there. Probably very, very old documents.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyler Durden says, good luck to all. Thank you very much, Tyler Durden, for that. Henry Walker says, the central bankers have a plan to reorganize the world according to the budding clover leaf map, which would have Israel as the global capital.
I don't believe that, to be honest. I don't think that's very plausible at all. I don't think the central bankers have much understanding or control of the situation anymore. There's been an interesting article in The Hill, the one that Andrei Matyanov mentioned, about how the West has drifted into a trap, both over Russia's sanctions and over its general economic policies. And I think this is exactly what's happening. I think that's where this is going. I don't think the central bankers know very much of what they're doing. Of course, some of them, and I accept this, but I think more in Europe, actually, than in the United States, may be influenced to a great extent by WEF thinking. And of course, they may think, as we've discussed many times, that they can ride out the chaos. But I doubt that, you know, they can.
All right. From where are we here? From Svinsted, the pseudo-communist party in Denmark are not for an EU army, so there is hope in Scandinavia and a downer for little Napoleon Macron.
I don't think there will be an EU army of any real significance, but that's another story.
Yeah. Life of Brian says the poor Ukraine army now has to resort to adapting Zelensky's piano method to warfare.
Yeah. Well, I've been reading some very sad things. Like there was an article on Agence France-Presse in which they were saying, you know, that the average age of some of the troops that are being thrown into battle in eastern Ukraine is about 40. That's average. So there must be people who are older than that. That corresponds with the pictures and videos and photographs that I'm seeing. So it's no longer just young people. And one does wonder why.
Yeah. From Super Mario, BBC already said who's winning indirectly. They said they could confirm Russia casualty at 1,856. That tells you Russia is winning because Ukraine's loss is almost at 16,000 or more.
I haven't seen those figures. And if you were right about that, I mean, that's a major admission because the British government is still going around telling everybody that it's 15,000 Russian casualties, a figure which I'm sure originates from Ukrainian sources and which is, in my opinion, pure imagination. Mm-hmm.
Resperger says, Mr. Gonzalo is back. Thank you for that. Nitswitch says, good to listen to you guys. Thank you, Nitswitch. MDU, thank you for that super chat. No Mayor says, Alex Alexander, do you think there was anything else Putin could have done?
I don't think so. I've come to the conclusion that the situation at the start of this year was such that he didn't really have any choice. Now, there's been a really interesting article by Gordon Hahn, an independent analyst in Russian affairs, somebody who's a rock-ribbed patriot, American patriot, whose family served in the US Armed Forces, a man of deeply conservative, patriotic views. And he's analysed all of this. He says that the CIA, he says he's seen briefing papers from the CIA that Putin was, you know, dithered about the decision. Now, dithered, I think, is the right word. Right up to the moment when he finally announced it, he didn't really feel that he had any option but to do what he did, because the attack by Ukraine on Donbass and the refusal of the US and NATO to negotiate in any serious way meant that there was really no choice at all. So I don't think there was any option but to start the war in the way that they did. Now, you can fault their tactics, and maybe, you know, I'm not, you know, an expert on this, but their strategy, their strategic decision to go to war was one which I think the Russians felt was forced on them.
All right, from Obadachi. Spoke with members of the German Greens outside my school for election stand, denied problem of Azov, claimed Putin wanted ethnic genocide, which shocked me. They stated the US should have stayed in Afghanistan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this is so remote from the Green Party as it was when it was founded. I wonder what happened. There's a story to be told there. There's some story to be told about the transformation of the Greens in Germany into such an extreme pro-American, Atlanticist, anti-Russian, anti, you know, whatever, neocon position. But, you know, I mean, it's quite clear that that's what the Greens are. At the same time, they're busy destroying the German industrial economy.
Real Latnosen says, a controversial question for Mr. Martianov. Aren't too many non-Russian ethnics in the power circle around Putin?
Ah, well, we'll have to pass them on to him. But I think that Martianov would say probably much that we would. Most of the people in the power structures in Russia are loyal to Russia. Alex put it very well in a program some time ago when we were talking about religious differences. Even people who are of different religious views in Russia consider themselves Russians.
From Nitswitch, one question. The German AWACS seem to gather intelligence. Could they become a target? Under which circumstances, or are they irrelevant? Actually, I think we answered
yeah,
that.
I think we did, yes.
With Andre.
Yes.
We answered that, yes. Stefan, thank you for that super sticker. James Johnson says, what happened to the French intelligence officers captured in Mariupol?
Who knows if they exist? I mean, I've not seen any confirmation that they exist. I mean, there's now reports that there's a NATO general, or rather, I should say, retired general, not the person we were hearing about before, but from a completely different nationality in Mariupol. I don't know whether that's true. You hear all kinds of wild stories.
Canadian, you mean?
Canadian. That's what I've heard. Now, as I said,
there's no one. Yeah.
I mean, we just don't know.
I've heard he's under investigation in Canada. Who knows?
Who knows? Okay. I mean, let's wait and see, and let's wait until we have some real proof that these people exist. Because so far, I'm not saying they don't exist, but I haven't seen anything that I would consider to be actual proof so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stephen says, "God bless Serbia and Russia." Thank you, Stephen, for that. Mm-hmm. Hello World says, "What did you guys make of Lavrov's comments about who must not be named? We all know the Euro peerage groups have an unhealthy fascination with the occult and the left-hand path."
Well, we've answered that question. Yeah, absolutely. Now, about the occult or the left-hand cult and all that, I happen to know that in Britain there is quite a lot of interest in this sort of thing. But it's a complex topic which I'd rather not discuss on this kind of live stream, because I mean that's a huge and rather strange topic which perhaps would repay a discussion on locals rather than here.
Ronald B says, does the incompetence of the US military planning make nuclear war more likely since they cannot win conventionally?
My own personal view is that the people who run the nuclear arsenal in the United States, very much like Andre was saying, are highly professional people. They're the most impressive people in the US military. I think there are still also some good people in the US conventional military as well. One mustn't write them all off. The US has found itself in situations, in ground war situations, where some people, and they have always been civilians, have floated the idea of using tactical nuclear weapons. It's been admitted that that happened at one point during the war in Vietnam in the 60s. And I've heard stories, which I can't confirm, that during the Afghan war, there was some talk of that too. The military, the US military, have always said, you're out of your senses. We're not going there.
Right, Shady Lady, thank you for that super sticker. Paul, thank you for that super chat. One Naruhado, thank you for that super sticker. Farrell says, the same anti-Russian brainwashing of children is happening in Kazakhstan. Thank you for that, Farrell. Kim Chan, thank you for that super sticker. Nathan says, the U.S. does not have a democracy. We are an empire republic. Imagine being able to actually vote for laws, to vote against war. We cannot do that. Thank you very much, Nathan. Luis, thank you for that super chat. Thank you very much. Zariel says, our problem in Germany is we never got to have our constitution, but only a basic law which kept us a slaved nation by the Allied forces.
I think that there is so much truth about this, actually. Yeah. But there's a story to discuss about Germany, which we again have to leave to another day. I mean, the German state that you see today is very, very much an artificial creation put together after the Second World War. And it has many of the features that you would expect from that too.
Louis Tseng, thank you for that super sticker. Magnesia Shan says, Andre, you tell of the Alpine. When did you last burn down the French apparatus?
Sure, I understand that, but...
Thank you very much. Van 1976 says, Rockefeller Empire Behind Wars of the 20th Century, Strange Death of FBR by E. Josephson, Rockefeller Interests in the 21st Century, U.S. State Department is Rockefeller.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, Van 1976. Rich says, Italy, being a major Western industrial power, has been undergoing a malaise since the late 90s. Can they recover in the future given their geographic location?
Well, they just made their position much harder because they're denying themselves. They're working to deny themselves cheap pipeline gas from oil and from Russia, pipeline gas and pipeline oil as well. So that's not going to help their industrial economy stay competitive. And again, one asks oneself, you know, do these people really know what they're doing? I mean, it's all calculated on, it's all a gamble on Russia folding fast. But if it doesn't, unless, of course...
JJHW says, think...
Unless, of course, they want to achieve the deindustrialization of their societies, which perhaps they do.
JJHW says, Stinger's reputation comes from being able to shoot down helicopters flying low and slow and hemmed in by valley walls in Afghanistan.
I've heard the same. But, you know, apparently they're not doing terribly well in the Ukraine war, nor is the Javelin, apparently.
Managoche says, new weapons developed in the U.S. unfortunately done by contractors. It is in the contractor's best interest to first deliver a somewhat functioning model that will need many more contracts to get the product into a useful state.
Yeah. I mean, one is hearing all kinds of stories about the fact that the US is going to have difficulty replacing the weapon systems it's sending to Ukraine, and it could take years to do so. I don't know whether that's true or not. All I would say is if it is true, it's another case that shows that the US hasn't thought this through. The neocons never think anything through.
Tweak says, do you know what's going on in Azovstal? Saw a video on Intel Slava showing a huge amount of smoke coming from that area. And Princess Leia says, apparently the civilians of Azovstal are being moved out with the help of the UN.
Yes, some of them have, but not all of them, it seems. And it's a curious affair because I think that the Ukrainians don't probably want to see them all go because, to be honest, that's what prevents the final assault on Azovstal. So it's, at the same time, I think they're nervous about simply turning away the UN and the Swiss and the Red Cross unless they can find some means to do it, by which would blame the Russians. So I don't think this is an easy situation to sort out clearly. But what I will say is this. I do think that the Azovstal drama is coming to an end. I think what I'm hearing is that these people are running out of food now, and they got lots of wounded, and the shelling and the bombing of Azovstal continues. I don't think this can continue for very much longer. Bear in mind, Ukrainians are dying in Azovstal. I don't think any Russians are.
JJHW says, simply said, the Russians made the Ukrainians into sitting ducks by stopping them from being able to move without being killed almost instantly.
That's what Andrei said.
Yeah. And Steve Brown says, supposedly there is a high-level asset in the plant being used as a bargaining chip by the NAZIs and complicating the negotiations, according to Azov. Just stuff from Telegram, no real intel.
I know, same here. I mean, I've seen the same reports, which I can't confirm.
Tepid Slip says, sorry if this is stupid, but does Putin have cancer? Just saw a New York Post article saying he will step down for surgery in May. Seems out of nowhere.
No, I don't believe that. Lavrov, again, in that interview with the Italian media, basically denied it. And he pointed out that Putin has met Guterres. Guterres presumably found him in a fit and healthy condition. And he's due to speak to Macron very soon. So I don't get the impression that he's about to step down, and he doesn't look to me at all ill. I mean, I accept that he can be tired and stressed, but, you know, that's a very, very big leap from that to saying that he's got something like cancer.
Full Monty says, question, is Kaliningrad Russia's weak spot? Can the West stop the supply lines to the enclave, and what would the consequences be? Does the West see it as a place for provocation?
It might do, but then I really do think we're into World War III type scenarios, because, of course, Kaliningrad is part of Russia and recognised as such, and it is very heavily defended, and there are nuclear weapons there. So I think that, I mean, I've no doubt, by the way. So I think that if the West starts to doing those kind of things, one, that would be a desperate and reckless thing, and also an unbelievably dangerous one.
A troubled mind says, the Russian military and tactical strategy appears to have been heavily guided by international human rights war crime laws, as in Russia has consistently engaged in an above-board campaign, going as far as to lay out what they are going to do before doing it. How they do it isn't shared, but what they are going to do has been.
I think that's absolutely correct. And by the way, there is much criticism in Russia that the Russians have been far too observant of these international rules and laws, to an extent that the US would never, for example, in the same kind of situation, feel bound by it. And that it's pointless, because whatever they do, they're still going to be accused of all the most terrible things. So they might as well instead take the gloves off and fight the war in order, you know, to just win it. So you had lots and lots of people in Russia saying that. I'm not saying that's what they should do. I'm just passing on what people in Russia are saying.
Kareem, thank you for that super chat. Orlando, thank you for that super chat. Joe Larson says, thank you. The evil West is running everything. How can they be stopped?
Well, time will eventually impose its own solutions. I mean, you can't continue to run things like we're doing in the West. Already we're seeing us descending into a major recession. Inflation crisis is getting worse. Living standards are falling. Sooner or later, almost certainly sooner rather than later, that's going to provoke major political reactions.
JJHW says, question for Andre. How are they going to secure the long border of what is left of Ukraine in the breakaway parts? Passive, such as giant minefields, or active in the constant air patrols, etc., or a mix of both?
I will pass that on to Andre, but I am going to say this. I'm not sure that the Russians have yet prepared a plan to deal with that. I think at the moment their priority is clearing the Donbass, getting perhaps Kherson region and those places sorted out, moving on maybe later to Nikolaev and Odessa. I don't think they've yet really thought through what they're going to do with the border.
From Ellen, I too wonder why there's so much Russophobia in the West. What bothers me most is NATO flooding Ukraine with weapons. Is Russia effective in preventing NATO material from actually being utilized?
I think that they can, to some extent, slow down the movement of heavy weapons to the front lines. I think if you're talking about light weapons, things like, you know, javelins and stingers, that's much more difficult. I mean, you can hide them in civilian cars. But, you know, there's a fuel crisis in Ukraine now. There's a railway crisis. It's going to be... And, of course, the Russians are able to target the warehouses. I mean, you know, with long-range missiles. I mean, you can't very easily hide 150-millimeter howitzers, for example.
Princess Leia says, U.S. weapons are proving to be very disappointing, as are the NATO trainers, completely inadequate.
I've heard this too. Some of the weapons are not working well. The British and Swedish LAW anti-tank weapon apparently has proved almost entirely ineffective. The Javelin apparently works in some situations, but not in others, and not very well against armoured vehicles, which is quite interesting. The Stinger apparently isn't proving very effective at all either. This British, I think it's called the Star Streak, is effective when it can be used, but it's complicated and heavy and difficult to lug around, which is now why they have to send it now in with, you know, the Alvis tracked armored vehicles, which make them an easier target. So there's been a lot of problems there. I suspect the tube artillery, the howitzers, which are presumably simpler weapons, will probably work better. But do bear in mind that Ukraine did not have any shortage of long-range artillery before the war, and the Russians apparently destroyed most of it. So it's not obvious to me why these long-range howitzers will make any difference.
Miss Texas says, please talk about Western Ukraine and what is the possible reality?
What is the possible reality? It's various ones. Poland annexes it. It becomes independent. The Russians occupy it and the people leave. I'm not going to guess which one of the three is the most likely because I don't know. But all the talk at the moment is that the Poles will occupy it. Now, having said that, the Poles have given away half their tanks to Ukraine. So, you know, their armoured forces don't seem to be particularly in good shape at the moment.
Nitswitch says, German media said that Russian spies were caught in Kiev. Any news on this or propaganda at its worst?
I'm guessing it's propaganda. But, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't Russian spies and maybe they were caught. I mean, the ghost of Kiev story has now been exposed as propaganda. And by the way, it's interesting that the Ukrainian Air Force took the decision to expose it. Apparently they had enough and they contradicted the Ukrainian government. But, you know, that gives you an idea of, you know, the fact that the Ukrainian authorities are absolutely able to peddle the most extraordinary fictions. What is shocking about that story is that we on the Duran never took the ghost of Kiev at all seriously. The Western media all did. They all pretended that a single pilot could shoot down single-handed 40 Russian aircraft, which is ludicrous. And it's been very, very strange and embarrassing to see Western media outlets, especially ones in Britain, now trying to excuse and rationalize the fact that they were so obviously lied to by the Ukrainians over that story too.
Pirate Fish says, given the aspect of attrition, can Andrei Matveyanov comment on Russia's military-industrial complex to resupply and stockpile technically advanced weaponry?
I'll pass that on to Andrei as well. I mean, I don't see any sign that the Russians are running out of anything at the moment, but I will pass that on to Andrei and see what he has to say.
Ebola says, I don't agree with Mr. M's views on the effective usefulness of cruise missiles. Cruise missiles, hypersonic or not, are easy to destroy, and it makes no difference because U.S. forces would win the battle for air supremacy in a head-to-head war with Russia. After that, it's at best a stalemate, but more likely game over. Ask Germany about that. The downside is that would probably result in nuclear escalation.
Well, I don't agree. I mean, I think Biden himself admitted that there is no counter to hypersonic missiles. So cruise missiles can be intercepted by air defense systems. I don't think fighters are able to do it. And I'm not even sure, by the way, whether the Patriot system is particularly good at intercepting cruise missiles, subsonic cruise missiles. But yes, they can be intercepted up to a certain point. There is no air defense at the moment against hypersonic missiles.
Mila says, so happy to see Captain Martyanov here. Just curious if he has any updated info or thoughts on the Moskva.
Oh, we haven't discussed that. He's done lots of programs on it. I think the best place to find that out is to follow him on his program. I mean, again, I'll send him a set of questions and I'll see if he has any comments to make about these things. But I don't think there's been any fresh news on the Moskva. He might have some information. I don't know.
Miss Texas G says, what is Poland going to do with all the NAZIs coming to live with them?
Yeah. Good question. I don't know. Maybe the Poles ought to start worrying about that.
Cynical Skeptic says, have the Russians increased the number of soldiers in Ukraine since the start of the war, and how many of them are there now?
We don't know one way or the other. Lots of rumours and stories about this, but it's already become clear, at least to me, that the total number of Russian soldiers sent in Ukraine at the start of the war was significantly less than the US was claiming.
Let's see, Brian, thank you for that super sticker. From Orange 1666, thank you for the super sticker. Gerald Armstrong says, why invade when the Kuznetsov is in dry dock?
I don't think Kuznetsov has any role to play in this war, to be honest. Even if it is, you know, repaired, when it is repaired, The one place it wouldn't be deployed to would be the Black Sea. So I don't think it has any role in this war at all.
Toilet Sauce says, Western propagandists keep talking about a Russian schedule. Actually, we answered this. Yeah. Does a modern army even bother with such a schedule? We
did answer this. I think Andre gave a very detailed answer to it. Yeah.
He gave a very good, Wayne Z, thank you for that super chat. AD says, can Mr. Martyanov talk in more detail about the used Russian precision weapons other than cruise missiles like the Lysers or Globes guided bombs? Actually, he did talk about this and targeting technique like targeting bots. He did talk about this as well. Bruno, thank you for that super sticker. JC Adder, thank you for that super chat. Gene Sweeney, thank you for that super sticker. Space Panther says, has been Valery Gerasimov really wounded in Ukraine?
No, I think I'm going to say that this is the chief of the Russian general staff. I think even the Western media and Western intelligence agencies accept that he wasn't. And the story is that he is the chief of the Russian general staff. He did a flying visit to Izium last week, conferred with military commanders there. I don't find that surprising, by the way, or unusual in war. Went back to Russia. The Russians then confirmed, or rather there's never been formal confirmation, but there's been reports in the media that he went on this flying visit. And then the Ukrainians claimed that they'd attacked the command center where he was and that 200 Russians were killed and perhaps he was killed or injured as well. The trouble is that that Ukrainian claim came after the reports about Gerasimov having done this trip to the Ukrainian battlefields. So I don't take that report, that claim, very seriously. And it's, I think, universally accepted that Gerasimov himself is healthy and well.
Adrian says, isn't it inevitable that Putin will be replaced by someone more pro-war?
It's not inevitable. Not inevitable at all. But if he were to, you know, be ousted or leave now, given the mood in Russia, I think that's probably exactly what you would see. But, you know, I don't personally think he's showing any sign of moving at all, actually.
Jerry D says, as an older Scottish-Canadian dual citizen, do you think my dream of visiting Russia will now ever be possible?
I don't know. I think it will be possible one day. In fact, I think it's highly likely that it will be. But we do have to get through this very difficult period, and I don't know how long that will be.
Alex Mickers, can you ask Andre if he believes that there is a possibility that Russia will drop a Sadamat 2 on Washington, D.C.?
I can answer that question. I can answer it, I'm sure, for Martyanov. I don't think that they're going to do that in any situation other than one of total collapse and nuclear war, which we're not anywhere close to. And, you know, let's hope that never comes.
From Ebola, what's to keep the same Ukraine groups from launching further attacks on the Donbass in the future if there is peace soon?
There isn't going to be peace soon. Ukraine has now made it very, very clear that they're not interested in any kind of negotiated solution, which I think is a disaster and a tragedy, but that's the position Ukraine is taking. So there's not going to be any peace soon. So given that there's not going to be any peace soon, I think two things are going to happen. Firstly, the Russians will eventually clear the Donbass. And secondly, given that the Ukrainians are not prepared to seek peace, it seems to me inevitable that the Russians will push further west.
From Sheikh Munem, I'm late to the show. I don't know if you have already discussed it, but I was a bit disappointed by the Russian tank performance. What happened to active protection systems on Armada tanks?
Well, Armata tanks have not been deployed in this war. I mean, the tanks that have been used overwhelmingly seem to be T-72s. And from what I've been able to see, the very first days of the war, when the Russians were moving at enormous speed, they did lose some tanks because of ambushes and such like. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. And what I'm hearing again, this is perhaps more Andre's province than mine, but what I'm hearing is that javelins are not working very well against Russian tanks, and the switchblade drones that, you know, were supposed to hit the tanks from above, that they're not working very well either. So it looks as if, in fact, the tanks are performing quite well.
Mm-hmm. Ronald B. says, question, what do you think the U.S. should do about rich and very destructive parasites like Soros?
Yeah. Well, that is a massive question, a huge question. I think that a lot of things have to be done. But the basic things that need to be done is that the laws that the United States already has, which make many of the practices that these people engage in, need to be enforced equally and rigorously. And if you do that, they can't operate in the way they have. I mean, lots of laws on taxes, on competition, on financial dealings.
Jamie Parker, thank you for that super chat. The Fix is in. Thank you for that super sticker. Carling Nike, thank you for that super sticker. Otnosen says, I wouldn't be similarly inevitable that Romania takes its lands back, which don't include Transnistria. By the way, Russia wants or needs to reach the Danube.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say what definitely is going to happen. So the Transnistria situation seems to have died down a little for the moment. But, you know, for the moment.
Yeah. Jennifer Chang says, today's news from Taiwan local media. Due to the war in Ukraine, the U.S. informed won't provide Taiwan M109A6 self-propelled artillery. The best available schedule to deliver is 2026. Wondering, what are the implications?
Well, I think it's another sign, by the way, of what one is increasingly hearing. Some apparently Congress people, Republican Congress people, are, you know, ringing alarm bells about this, that so much American equipment is now heading to Ukraine that there isn't enough for Taiwan. What it means is that a window for China is starting to open. Whether the Chinese will do it is another question. But of course, the Chinese have lots of problems of their own, which they're making worse, in my opinion, through a absolutely misguided lockdown policy. And you never know, that might persuade them to do things that they might not otherwise do.
Doran says, what about the sinking of the Moskva? There is speculation that it was sinked using some Western missiles. Penguin.
I'm going to ask Martyanov about this. I think he's skeptical about that. As am I, by the way. I don't see much sign of Western anti-ship missiles in Ukraine at the moment. And I don't think we actually have enough information to be able to say what caused the explosion on Moskva.
V-Plan says, fantastic interview. I am a new fan of Andrei Martyanov. My family is from Ukraine, but I grew up in both places, Russia and Ukraine. For me, it will always be one country, a country of Slavs and other 200 of ethnic groups.
Yeah, I know a lot of Russian. A lot of people think like that. I know an awful lot of people think that way.
The Fix is in says, here from the USA, love you guys bunch. Thanks for the updates and all your work. Harry C. Smith, thank you for that super chat. Harry C. Smith says, the president of Ukraine's salary is just USD $28,000 a year, yet over 90% of Zelensky's $860 million fortune only appeared since becoming president in 2019.
Yeah, well, you can do the maths. reach what I would have thought are the inevitable conclusions.
Raphael says, Alex Bro, you know Russia is about to seize $500 billion from Western businesses. I think Chuck Schumer's Russia will not buy any yachts back.
You know, that's true, but I mean, can I just say something? I mean, I think that one of the things that has really, I find it absolutely ludicrous, is that the way, after all these sanctions that Russia West has imposed upon the Russians, Western governments, Western media talk about Russians stealing assets, breaking contracts, and all of these things. That's exactly what the West has been doing, except, of course, that they say that it's not breaking contracts or stealing assets. It's just applying sanctions, but no due process. So, of course, the Russians are now countering by doing the same things.
J.K. Wynn says, with the U.S. defense budget, we should have force fields, lasers, and swarm drones controlled like Ender's Game.
Absolutely true.
Very true. Wayne Z says, this is mainstream media. Corporate media has lost the war, and those conversations are the tools we have to bring back. Education to our indoctrination institutions. Thank you, Alex and Alexander and guests.
Well, I mean, you know...
Thank you, Wayne Z, for that.
Absolutely. Can I just say, I mean, if anybody had any doubt by now that most of what you read in the Western media, in the mainstream media, is fiction. I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, you know, we went through the whole Russiagate thing, which was complete fiction. And, you know, it astonishes me that after all that, people still believe them on, you know, things that happen or they say happen in Ukraine. You know, what has to happen before the penny finally drops, as we say in Britain, and people understand that most of what you read in the media today simply can't be relied on?
Daniel Andre says someone should give Alex Christopher a coffee, man. Thank you, Daniel Andre, for that. Darlene says, super sticker. Thank you, Darlene, for that. Nitswitch says, quote of the evening, war is a democratic affair. The enemy also has a say in it. Andre, of course, it's true, but it is also funny.
I think it's an absolutely brilliant, comment by Andre, actually.
Yeah. Mason, thank you for that super sticker. Mariana, thank you for that super sticker. Zook Zooksy, thank you for that super sticker. Summer of 1970, thank you for that super sticker. Cactus Ray, thank you for that super sticker. Gordon, thank you for that super sticker. Steve-O says, nice tan, Alex. I want to work in Cyprus too. Thank you, Steve-O, for that super chat. Jerome says, great show. Summer of 1970 says, the difference between stupidity and genius is that the genius has its limits. Albert Einstein, we are whistling past the graveyard.
That's so true. That is so true.
Summer of 1970. CC says, the Duray of the two Alexes. Lyra and bots and his bots. Okay. Thank you for that, CC. Jerry Fox, thank you for that super sticker. Marco Juke, thank you for that super sticker. Commando Crossfire says, your words are as empty as your future. I am the vanguard of your destruction. You will exist because we allow it, and you will end because we demand it. Probably Russian negotiator to Kiev.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. The Fix Is In says that Durant should invite Jimmy Dore on from the Jimmy Dore Show, who talks about this war and to spot on.
Well,
thank you very much for that. The Fix Is In. That would be great. AD says the most important consequence of the Russian operation is that it broke the threshold or the barrier of whom gets to use extraterritorial force. Will that also free external Russian intelligence?
That is an interesting point, actually, because, of course, up to now, the Western powers have acted as if they're the only people who are able or permitted to do this thing. And they're very, very angry that another country, that is to say Russia, has acted like it has, you know, acting in another country in the way that the Western powers regularly do. I don't think the Russians are prepared to cast off all constraints. I think they understand very well that they have to act always in harness with their friends, what their friends want. And I've said this before, I'm going to say it again, I think a major constraint on Russia's policy is keeping Beijing and Delhi happy. And I think that isn't that's an aspect of this which is far too little acknowledged and far too very, very much underestimated.
Bakunu Matata says, amazing live, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you for that. Zuxuxi says, thanks, Andre M. Great to hear your opinion. Great stream. Amadi, thank you for that super sticker. Nitswitch says, AAA show today. Alexander, Alex, Andre, of course, Gonzalo too. Thanks for this. We'll rewatch this probably many times over. to drink in missed details. Thank you, NetSwitch, for that. Commander Crossfire says, congrats to Alexander on over 100K subscribers. Yesterday, we obeyed kings and bent our necks before emperors, but today we kneel only to the truth.
Thank you very much. That's great. Yeah.
Thank you, Commander Crossfire. Thank you for that. Steve-O says, Andre, how great will the memory of Putin be to the Russians in the future compared to other former great Russian leaders? We actually answered that during the live stream. Bill Crowell, thank you for that super chat. Wayne Z says, how does the weakest German government since Bismarck recover from the incompetence of the Scholz marionette show? Actually, you both answered that during the stream, both you and Andre. Commander Crossfire says, when visiting Moscow, one would think that streets and parks would be named after war heroes. Instead, they are named after artists and architects.
That's a very good point, actually.
Very true. Very good point. T. Clem, thank you for that super chat. Jane Lindsay, thank you for that super sticker. Bill Crowell says, are the Russians rotating troops through the Ukraine operation in order to produce more with battle experience? Andre answered that during the live stream. Ola says, thanks. Thank you, Ola. T-Chem says, aren't oligarchs becoming more patriotic to build Russia's recovery? We answered that as well during the stream. Neurosurgery Highland says, the U.S. wanted the war, so are we running on CIA playbook? So what is the goal here?
Well, what is the goal? I don't know what the goal is because the goal changes all the time. But, I mean, I think at the moment, the idea is total victory over Russia, bleed it dry, force the change of government in Moscow. In other words, achieve all the objectives the neocons have hankered for years. And I think this is what they want to use Ukraine to do. What it will end up doing, in my opinion, is the diametric opposite. It will destroy Ukraine, strengthen Russia, weaken Europe, and weaken further the US. All US projects, and all neocon projects rather, end badly. There's been no exceptions.
Surya, thank you for that super sticker. And Ines Fad says, part of the Build Back Better ideal involves a deconstruction of the U.S. as a world superpower in order to rebuild this. Do you think Western stupidity in the way the U.S. is handling Ukraine is purposeful?
It could very well. I mean, it is purposeful in terms of some people. But I think I've just described what I think neocon project is. And as I said, I don't think they think in terms of weakening the US. I think, on the contrary, they are approaching this with a massively exaggerated idea of what the US can achieve. They always do this. They always make these mistakes. They always think that they can, you know, run affairs in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Eastern Europe, wherever. And it always turns to dust, but they always walk away and try again.
All right, so that is everything.
That is everything.
Thank you very much to everybody who tuned in to that show. Yeah. You'll find the link to that live show on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, and of course, durantlocals.com. Durant Shop, 10% off when you use the code GOODDAY. Take care, everybody.